I agree that just quitting cold is not the best thing.
Yeah. What do you think about the attitude of workers to their work? Things changed a lot? Did it change a lot in your time?
Yes, I would think so. I would say there was a big change.
How would you describe it?
Well, I would have to say that with quite a number of employees. Now, whether I could say the majority, I'm inclined to say the majority, haven't the sense of dedication to the company that was there up until recent years. The sugar refinery, as far as I'm concerned, have always been a good place to work. I don't think anybody's ever heard me say a bad word about them. I used to say, well, you'll never get rich working for the sugar refinery. But I worked there for 49 years, was never laid off a day. I was paid regularly. And my pay was always within shooting distance of my contemporaries in other companies. And I found them very, very good to work for.
What about the sort of the attitude to work itself, the sort of like, you might say, pride of work?
This is becoming less and less. To me, it seems that really all they're interested in is putting in their time to get their pay, and feel no responsibility to the company as such.
I asked the same question to Ken Hope, and he said the only work they want to do is stepping up to the pay window.
Yeah. Well, you could put it that way. Now, this is not true of all of them. You still have good conscientious men there. But I think the old breed are dying out.
Did you ever feel like quitting at all? You said the one time when you didn't have enough work.
Well, that was the one time. There was another little funny anecdote. When Mr. Rennie retired, that's a mechanic, and the night he retired, he drove me home, and he said, Joe Lyons was in the car with us, a draftsman, and Mr. Rennie said to Joe, you know, he says, I can remember this guy. And to use Mr. Rennie's expression, when he was a snotty-nosed kid, he came into the sugar refinery, he was a snotty-nosed kid. And he said, one day he came into my office as hot as could be, and fed up with something, and he was giving me the devil. He ended up by saying, well, Mr. Rennie, one thing you can be sure of, when I get through my apprenticeship, you won't find me hanging around the sugar refinery. And he says, here it is. 25, 30 years later, he's still there.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Did you ever have any quarrels with anybody that you felt serious enough to, you know, to think about quitting?
No.
You never wanted to throw Mr. Ballou in the river?
No. I got along very well in this place. The reason I did was that I stood up to him. I managed to prove him wrong once or twice. And he was he was a big enough man to come back and apologize to me that he was wrong.
Did he fly off the handle at first of all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a little trigger happy on that.
Yeah.
But I remember we had the amongst the old-timers, there were the Bermans. Two Berman brothers. Yeah. They were bricklayers and cement finishers and this kind of, that kind of job. We were building a restroom on top of the old time office. And they were putting in the concrete floor. And this was soon after Blue came to the Vancouver. And he went up there and he passed some snide remark to Bill Berman. The fact that that's not the way to do that or something. Bill jumps up, hands a trowel to Blue and says, okay, you can do better, you show me. Blue dropped the trowel and walked there and never said another word. But, now a lot of the old timers, they wouldn't take any. No. No, they didn't have to. They were
good craftsmen.
They were craftsmen.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that anybody who worked there was wronged for his job and damaged the refinery? It cost them, you know. They put up with people they shouldn't have put up with.
Well, I don't really know what you're... if you're talking about amongst the workers, the company was very good at keeping people on and trying to find some niche for them. Mm-hmm. They didn't like to throw them out.
Yeah.
It was like different ones of being incapacitated for one reason or another. Well, the company would keep them on, try to find a place where they could fit in. Some of them never did. But I remember one time, now I didn't actually see this, but I was told by one of the men that was there that Ernest Rogers was going through the plant with Ernie Webster. And there was a fellow leaning on the window, looking out one of the windows. And they walked by and walked right through to the other end of the warehouse. Came back again, and the fellow was still standing there. And Mr. Rogers says, that man's asleep. Ernie says, by golly, I'll fire him today. Ernie says, no, he says, somebody's got to keep him. Somebody's got to keep him. He says, don't fire him.
That's quite a good story. Mm-hmm. What I was really after was that sometimes a company will keep a person on who is, just to say, a real square peg or dishonest in some way, and they say, well, maybe he'll get better. And their charity, if you like, costs them money because the guy is just no damn good.
Yeah.
Can you think of any instances like that? The major ones, you know, that cost the company money, or maybe, you know, sort of altered its history a little bit. You can't think of anybody.
Well,
I'm not asking you to blacklist anybody. I'm just interested in the company's history. You know?
In most instances where there's been anything along that line, the person has had a problem. Mm-hmm. Maybe a drinking problem. Maybe a family problem. Or maybe a health problem. And I've always admired the company that they didn't summarily fire people without investigation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, to try and find the causes. Mm-hmm. I think they've been very good that way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, nothing stands out in my mind. Oh, different. Men, of course, I used to get bit ratty at times with different ones, trying to get work done with men that had no interest in getting the work done. This would get you a little upset at times and
make you wish you were armed.
Well, yes. I've lost my temper at times. But every time I've lost my temper, I found that I was wrong.
Yeah, that's often the case.
Yeah. So, recent years I tried to avoid that.
Do you remember any stories about old BT your father might have told you? Or? Somebody else might have told you?
Well, I know he was a bit of a martinet. Somebody told me. I don't know whether it was Ernie Webster or who it was. He would come in on his yacht, you know, on a Monday or after being away on a weekend or something. Somebody overheard him say, "Well, all right, now I'm going in and give them half," you know. And he'd go around storming around trying to see what he could find wrong and kind of thing. Then on weekends and on my holidays, I used to work out at the yacht club. And they had some stories about him that his tender from the Aquila, you know, he liked to have things Navy fashion, and when they'd roll the tender into the yacht club, they'd come along and at a signal they had to stand their oars on end and stand at attention, you know, and all this kind of thing. It was a bit of a thing. But no, I've never heard anything about him really that would make a...
When you went down there with your father, did you see him?
No. I did not see Mr. B.T. Rogers, and I didn't see Blythe Rogers either. But I've admired so many things around the plant that were built in B.T. Rogers' time, that either he was a very smart engineer or he hired some very smart engineers, because buildings and equipment that were built in his time have still been serving right up until recent years, and some of them still are now. One thing that I don't think I mentioned it to you, it's too bad that I hadn't had this idea before, but it would likely be too big an exhibit anyway to use, but, and you could check, maybe I'd mention this to you on the phone. The fellow, Jimmy, Jimmy, oh, his son's still alive. That was a while ago.
Was he a pilot?
No. He looked after the engine room. And Jimmy called me over that they wanted to get this air compressor going, so I went over. And starting up a steam engine, of course, you know, you have to warm it up and get the water out of the lines, and you open the petcocks on the bottom of the cylinder and just crack the throttle open so that it gradually gets the water out of it. And at the same time, it's heating up the cylinder. And I was standing back with Jimmy, and leaning on the rail there and just watching while the engine was warming up, you know, wasn't turning over or anything. All of a sudden I said to Jimmy, I said, "Hey, that cylinder's moving. The cylinder itself." Oh, he says, "It can't." I said, "No, I know it can't." Well, I said, you look at it. It's moving. So we went over, and this cylinder was lagged with wood strips, you know, hardwood strips. And evidently the cockroaches have been nesting in this, under this lagging. Mm-hmm. When the heat came on, they just came out there in a solid sheet, moving across this cylinder, and it looked for all the world as though the cylinder was moving. So we started batting these things down and tromping on them until we had an inch of goo on the floor. Dead cockroaches.
Yeah, we must keep that story dark. I mean, we have the public chasing us and worrying about cockroaches in the sugar.
You know, it used to be a familiar sight down there.
Cockroaches?
Yeah, it was bad for them. Mm-hmm. But in recent years, well, for the last 10 or 15 years, I haven't seen a cockroach in the plate. Mm-hmm. One time they used to be. Mm-hmm. It was a real, they had to put on a real program to get rid of them. Yeah. They're very difficult to get rid of, you know.
Yeah. Right now it's the bloody pigeons.
That's always been a problem.
Yeah. I used to shoot pigeons a lot the whole time. I was itching to get in there with a shotgun.
Have you ever had a crack at shooting them?
Yeah.
Well, they got a gun down there. I used to go out shooting them.
I might do that, you know, off hour. Mm-hmm. Maybe just put an air gun there.
No, they got a 22 then.
No, we might use 22.
Well, what we do, we get 22 shells with just a couple little bird shot in them.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Because we're afraid to use solid shells for fear we'd set off a sprinkler pipe or something like that, you know, a sprinkler head.
Yeah.
And also, they can travel too far.
Yeah. That's a good idea. I'd like to do some of that.
Oh, I killed quite a few of them.
Yeah. But they're brilliant. That's what you have to say. Oh, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's get back to business. What do you think about the union? Were you a union member?
Never was.
Did you oppose it?
Well, I...
Or did you not have to join?
I did not have to. Mm. I was on management by the time the union got in.
Yeah.
And I was very glad that I didn't have to.
Yeah. Did you feel that it was a mistake or unnecessary?
Well, I don't know whether I'm speaking out of line or not, but all the time Ernest Rogers was alive, he was always one or two jumps ahead of the unions in making sure that we were looked after, because I had the business agent for the machinist union phone me a number of times to ask about organizing the shop down there. I said, well, what can you offer? He told me, I said, you got to do better than that. I said, we're doing better than that now. I said, there's no way you can get in there. And as you've heard about Ernest Rogers at the time when, during the Depression, when everybody was laying off men and cutting wages, he brought in the 40-hour week and paid us for 48 hours, no cut in pay. And then he brought in a pension scheme and a sick benefit scheme, you know. Mm-hmm. There's always a jump ahead. Mm-hmm. But when he died, I don't think Philip took too much interest in that part of it. I think he turned everything over to Mr. Boyd. Mm-hmm. Mr. Boyd was an excellent man, but too much of the old school. And when I speak of the old school, I'm speaking about when I started work. I had one right only. I didn't have a voice at all or anything. It was just a case of, well, if you don't like the situation as it is, you're quite at liberty to get out. It's gone from that now to where it's practically impossible to lay a man off or fire a man. The union tells the company what they have to do. Now my dad was quite a religious man. And he was the old school religion too, you know. And he would never join a union. It's against his principles. One time he was working in the CPR shops here. And when they organized the CPR shops, and the union said, well, you either have to join the union or get out. And the company offered him a foreman's job so that they could put him on salary and he wouldn't have to, but he didn't want the foreman's job and he wouldn't stay there so he quit. Went to the sugar factory. And thank goodness they didn't have a union during my dad's time. So that way, but I was brought up to this idea to a certain extent, but you don't organize against your boss.
Yeah. Do you think the union has hurt the company?
Not really. They've had some good. They've had some good heads in their union. I'm inclined to think it's deteriorating a little bit, but they've had some fairly level-headed men on there, and I think the company has been, well, I'm sure they've leaned over a hell of a lot farther backwards than what I would have to get an agreement at times.
Yeah. Did you make good friends at work? Did you sort of went on fishing trips and this sort of thing with them?
To some extent. Most of them are gone.
Yeah.
Died or one thing or another.
Yeah. There seems to have been in the early days a kind of camaraderie among the employees.
Yeah. We used to have bowling teams, and the company picnics used to be a big thing, but this is all petered out now.
Would you say now that there's less of this sort of camaraderie among the workers?
I would say so, to a large extent.
When you first started that, did the conditions in the plant strike you as dirty, or did it seem like a clean place?
Well, when I went there, I had nothing to compare it with.
Mm-hmm. Compared with your own home and your living conditions, did it seem like a dirty place? To or just like you imagine the workshop to be?
Well, the machine shop is all right, as far as I find it. The only thing that I didn't like down there, we had what I call a pig trough to wash in. It was just like a kitchen sink, only about three times as long, with a steam pipe in the bottom of it and a cold water tap. And you fill this up, and me as the apprentice, I used to have to go and do this just ahead of quitting time. Fill this sink up and turn the steam on to get the water hot. And then there'd be maybe 8 to 12 men get around this damn trough, slopping around in there. And by the time us kids could get in there, the water was so thick you could hardly move your hands in. So consequently, you went home with all the dirt you'd accumulated all day. There's no way you'd wash your face or anything.
Yeah. How long did it take before that was changed and you got better?
Oh, I think it would be somewhere along in Ernest Rogers' time when we...
Would Ernie be the sort of guy that would do something about it?
I think so, yes.
Fordham Johnson had the reputation of not spending a nickel that he didn't have to spend.
No, this is right. Yeah. Fordham Johnson was not a... well, all right, I only spoke to him about twice. Mm-hmm. And then only just Gaudet or something, other Schumann. He wasn't a man that came around the plant. It was very, very seldom you ever saw him out of his office in the plant. I think I only saw him in the plant about three times.
And told him that he was usually lost.
Yeah, he didn't, he acted as though he didn't know where he was, what it was all about. I believe, well, he was a banker, I believe, originally.
Yeah, that's right.
And likely all his training was on financial things, and he likely had no interest in practical things. But this is not true about the Rogers. The Rogers have always been interested in anything mechanical or anything the operation of the plant. I don't think there's one of them but what could step in and make sugar. Just like old BT did when the day they started it up. He started in the raw sugar shed and showed them how to cut the sacks of sugar in, or the baskets of sugar into the melt, and then he followed it through and he had to get up into the melt house and show them how to melt it, and then follow it through up to all the way through until I think he was about ready to collapse by the time he got the first sugar through the place, because he had nobody that practically that knew anything about it.
Who told you about that?
Oh, I can't tell you who it was, but an old...
It's perfectly true.
Yeah, it's an old story.
He was the only one who knew anything about sugar.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Can you think of any other names of companies that supplied machinery, the major suppliers of machinery, sort of in your early days? I'm thinking, you know, that what happens is...
Not so much on machinery, and yet some of it might have been done through a local firm, Gordon and Bellier. Now, we used to buy a lot of our hardware supplies through Gordon and Bellier.
They still around here?
No, they have...
You have to know that?
Yes, they went to Marshall Wells, I believe. As a matter of fact, just in the paper last week, I saw where Mrs. Bellier died.
How would you spell that?
B-E-L-L-Y. No, wait a minute. How the hell would you get Bellier in there?
But I would spell it is like a French name, B-E-L-L-I-E-R.
No, no, Bellier. B-E...
Say that again. The machine was setting up cubes.
Blocking 25-pound blocks of sugar.
Of cubes or just solid?
Cube sugar.
So, yeah, okay.
And he worked this thing out and it was quite good. And there was a fellow came in there to... He had a design for a packer that he adapted to pack 1 pound cartons of sugar. And he was he classed himself as an inventor. And he was getting a patent on this machine. My dad and I helped build this machine for him. He got permission from the company to, I presume, the company wouldn't have to pay him any royalty for it, that they would supply the labor and if they could work we could work the thing out, he could get the design for free, you see.
Yeah.
Something of that, I imagine. Well, anyway, on this, while this fellow was here, he was over admiring this machine that my dad had designed. He said, did you get a patent on that? My dad said, no, I never thought about it. Well, he says, I'm going back to the patent office on this other machine. He said, do you think you could get permission from the company to sell it if I can get a patent on it. So my dad went to Mr. Rogers and got a letter from my... Jesus, I must go through my drawers. It's possible I might still have that letter.
Yeah, if you can turn that out, I'd like it.
That they gave him permission. Of course, this guy took off and never heard from him again. So the only thing we heard about while he was at it, my dad... mentioned to him that he had a little gadget that he'd always than, you know, in inventions, a little idea that you can sell a great number of articles from. With my dad with a hacksaw blade. For years he'd been grinding the set off the teeth at each end. I don't suppose you ever used a hacksaw, but you use a hacksaw, you use the center part of it. Pretty soon the set gets off of that, and then you go a little longer stroke and it binds in the end. So he told this guy about this. Oh, he said, by God, he said, I'm going to check that one too. Well, anyway, about 6 months or so later, we found out that a company was making hacksaw plates that way. But my dad never heard anything back from this one.
He was lucky, Rob.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately the way you should never let another man look after your business.
No. Oh, well, of course. What the?
Unless you get a pretty tightly tied up.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's very interesting. Listen, you said talk about going through the drawers and turning that up. I'd really like to have that. That's very interesting.
I'll see if I can find it.
Yeah. And you might look and see if you've got any other old, while you're doing it, any other old refinery stuff going back to your father. Just check around. Anything, any letters from the company, bonuses, this sort of thing. And you spoke about that bonus thing. If you have any letters about that, I'd really like to have them. Nobody keeps these things. But
I don't. But of course, at that time, I was. You get a buck, you spend it.
Yeah.
No. It was a very pleasant interlude in my life, working for the sugar refinery, and looking back, I don't regret it.
Do you think that the way the company runs differs a great deal from other companies? And you must be.
Well, sugar refinery, in common with a number of the older companies in Vancouver years ago, were more or less a family affair. And they felt a responsibility to their employees, almost a family feeling towards them. And the sugar refinery has, I would say, persisted in that far longer than anybody else. And I think you still find a bit of that feeling as far as the management's concerned. Feeling responsible for their men and their well-being.
Yeah. In terms of setup of factories, do you think that most factories have machine shops in the same way that you ran one?
It was more that way years ago, but it's a thing that's dying out.
Do you think that that the company has been pretty original in the kind of innovations that they've done?
To a large extent, they've had to. There's not that many sugar refineries.
Yeah.
And if you want to make an innovation, which calls for some different equipment, you either had to adapt your ideas to some machine that was on the market, or you had to build your own. And to a large extent, we built our own years ago. We did a lot of things that we don't do today.
Sorry about throwing things out. I was hoping that the carpenter or the plumber would have had to chuck them all out. Yeah.
The
all the old
pattern?
Yeah.
Well, I was instrumental in that.
Are you throwing up? You may not keep that yourself. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was always accused down there of being a pack rat.
Yeah?
I wouldn't throw anything out. Mr. Rogers got after me one time. They were cleaning out the old machinery shed in the basement. And Mr. Rogers came over and he says, look, he says, keep Art out of here. Don't let Art in here. You'll never throw anything away. And but the money or anything back? No, but obviously the sugar refinery is yours. You wanted them.
This was in your first wife died.
Yeah.
And he offered it to you.
Yeah.
That seems to have been a sort of traditional thing because...
Yes, I've heard of it from a number of sources.
Yeah. Because B.T. Rogers once, there was a guy whose wife fell sick and he lived on the North Shore. And B.T. had him buried across it in the Kapula.
Is that right? Yeah. I never heard that.
Did Jack Perry tell me that?
Mm-hmm. No, they've been pretty good.
Yeah. Now that the business of pension is finding that pension's not going too far, it's getting worse and worse. Yeah.
Well, of course, I feel a little bit better myself. No, but I don't blame the company.
Mm-hmm.
I blame myself.
No, I don't think that's.
But I should have been able to look ahead and pay more into it.
Yeah, but the thing is that even it's not your fault, it's not the company's fault.
No.
The fault of this damn government which is producing this inflation.
Well, this is true. It's too late now to do anything as far as I'm concerned, but the younger generation should be trying to get something better going.
Yeah, but the trouble is, you see, that for us too, when it's
mind humming or something.
Yeah. Okay. I want to check with these people because you see the refinery employee has not yet been notified about the Tunisia project in an official way.
Yeah.
They've just got to know about it unofficially because I'm sort of looking around.
Yeah.
And as I must pretty soon get in touch with all these people whose fathers work here and who are not still alive, most of them.
Yes, well I would say you should have a good chit chat with Gordon Henning.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Henney's gone, and Alec Henney's gone. Alec Henney's boy is still alive. His name is Colin Hanney. He got in his numerology bit and changed his name to Hanney. He's not at the plant, of course.
No. That's Alec Haney's son.
Yeah. Alec Haney was a real old timer there. And, as I say, at the last he was a packing house foreman.
And what did you say the son's Christian name was?
Colin.
That's
H-A-N-N-E-Y. It might be
Hanney
or...
Because there's a
Hanney. Yeah, all right. Hanney. Hey,
there's a famous Hanney in literature. When was this?
Oh, in the 30s.
And this was a Canadian football team, right? Not soccer.
It was soccer.
Mm. Soccer team.
Yeah. And a lot of these fellows were old country types. They played soccer in England. And at one time... The superintendent was quite interested in soccer. Anybody applying for a job, first thing they asked him, are you a soccer player? And that's how a lot of these fellows got in there.
Who was the superintendent?
I think it was Webster.
Webster was a soccer player?
Hmm?
He was the soccer player?
No, he wasn't a soccer player.
But he was interested in it.
I think it was. It was in his time, anyway.
Yeah, I see.
It might have been a yard foreman or something that was more interested in it.
Yeah.
But John Reed was one.
John Reed?
Yeah, he was one of the soccer players. Pete Ferguson. Mm-hmm.
He was a...
Jack Corbett.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell else is left of the old soccer players?
And they'd sort of play around there on the city and so on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That little leak going here, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember too much of that. I wasn't interested in. Mm-hmm. But John Reed could tell you stories mm-hmm. about that.
Well, that's good.
That could be an interesting yeah. little mm-hmm. thing to have.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of that. Mm-hmm. I knew about the picnics and the bowling.
Well, I think there's the old soccer cup still down in the basement there in my office somewhere.
Yeah, well, I hunt around for that. I haven't seen the soccer cup. I've got the bowling cup, the old bicycle race trophy that BG mm-hmm. gave up.
Well, I think there was a soccer cup too. I'm not positive about it, but I think there was.
Okay.
But it hadn't been thrown out.
John Reed or Ferguson and myself, they might have pictures of the team. It's quite likely.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite possible.
Okay.
Going back to the war, when this plate shop that we had set up, mm-hmm. You have got information on that from other sources, mm-hmm. but Tommy Lapsley mm-hmm. was the leading light in that.
Oh, yes.
He had worked in the shipyards in the old country before. Mm-hmm. Now,
is he still around?
No. No, he's gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another one you could